You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the official flagship of the team. As we talk on this Thursday, the Rockets are finally ready to get back to the hardwood. They play the Celtics tonight. That's a TNT nationally televised game, and the Wizards on Friday night. It's a tough back-to-back against two above 500 teams on the road without Clint Capella, likely without Chris Paul. We know without Chris Paul tonight. So it may not be the best couple of days, although when you have James Harden, even though the Rockets are on a three-game losing streak, of course they're 25-7 on the year, and despite the injuries to Capella, to Chris Paul, to Luke Bamute, anytime you have James Harden, the league's MVP frontrunner on your roster, you're perfectly capable of getting hot and winning any game. So we'll finally get to see what happens. We know they've had a lot of time to practice because since Friday's game against the Clippers to close out the homestand last week, the Rockets have only played once in the past 6 days. That was Christmas night in Oklahoma City. Finally, they get back to business tonight. We have three games in the next 4 nights, so we'll have plenty of actual basketball news to discuss in the days ahead. And of course, you want to hear about the Thunder game. If you haven't heard already, check out our postgame show with Adam Clinton. That's in our Lockdown Rockets archives, wherever you listen to us on this program. Today, though, I want to catch up you guys with what's been going on off the court in the past couple of days. There's been a lot of interesting news, both injuries and with the roster for the Rockets, so I want to preview that ahead of tonight's game. Also, the back half of the show, I've got an extended interview with Ben Standig. He's the Wizards insider for NBC Washington and the host of the daily Locked On Wizards podcast. That's our sister show on this Locked On podcast network. He's going to be on the back half of the show, my interview with him. He's going to help preview Rockets-Wizards tomorrow. That's going to be a big game. And also get some national perspective on how the Rockets are seen at this point in the year. Again, 25-7 through the first 32 games and tied with the Warriors in the loss column, but with the tiebreaker, of course, at the moment for the West all-important number one seed. First things first, though, before we get to tomorrow night's game with the Wizards, before we talk about tonight's game with the Celtics, although I don't want to talk too much about the Celtics because by the time a lot of you listen to this, the game may be underway or already over, but let's talk about the off-court news. The bad Clint Capella. We learned early yesterday, Wednesday, that he sustained an orbital fracture from an elbow, I believe by Steven Adams in the third quarter of that Oklahoma City game. Hilariously, Hubie Brown did not even notice the foul. I believe he was arguing for a travel, which is just ludicrous in my opinion. This has not been exactly a banner month for Hubie Brown, and unfortunately he's been in a lot of the Rockets telecast of late. But regardless, this is not a Hubie issue. It's something that happens over the NBA. It's not a dirty play. Lots of elbows, especially in the paint, get thrown around by accident, and Clint got caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he's out for these next two games, Boston and Washington, the road trip, and he'll be reevaluated this weekend. The good news, from what I've heard, I do not believe this is a long-term injury. They certainly think that with a mask, he will be able to play through it. It's just a matter of letting the swelling go down so that the mask can be effective. And they are hopeful, well, not a guarantee, they're hopeful that Sunday against the Lakers on New Year's Eve, that he'll be ready to go. And I think the goal for both Clint and Chris Paul is to get them a couple of games, both the Sunday New Year's Eve game against the Lakers, and then I believe it's Wednesday night against the Orlando Magic. Basically, you want to get those guys, your mainstays, a couple of games in advance of that huge showdown next Thursday night against the Warriors, which is certainly when you're wanting to be at full strength or as close to full strength as you can. I don't think it's a coincidence that they're also targeting Luke Bamute to return that date. That would be 3 weeks from his original three-week diagnosis, which seems to be on course in regards to his dislocated shoulder. And I think the goal for the Rockets is to have everybody back by that January the 4th game against Golden State and hopefully get them a couple of games of kind of tune-up before that as well. Because the Rockets right now, even though they've lost three in a row, again, they're still tied with the Warriors and they hold the tiebreaker at the moment. More importantly than that, if you beat Golden State next Thursday, not only do you pick up a game on them in the standings, but you also secure the season tiebreaker because the Rockets and Warriors only play three times. So that's a big deal. If you get that game next Thursday, you've already secured two wins out of the three, so you have the tiebreaker. That's a big deal. I think that's what the Rockets are targeting. And so with Clint Capella, it's a tough break, but they don't see it as a long-term injury. I think he'll be able to play through the mask just fine. It's an injury that, while certainly painful, happens a lot around the NBA, and in some ways, actually don't think it'll be as tough on him as, say, playing 30 minutes against Steven Adams on the bruised heel that he's lugging up and down the court. So I think Clint, once the swelling goes down, he's going to be fine. I also don't like what I've seen some. Is he injury prone? No, this is just a fluke thing that happens to a lot of NBA players. That's why you see masks worn on a regular basis. You know, there, you know, you could have chronic injuries. You know, if someone keeps injuring their feet, you know, I've said before, now Clint with just a bruised heel, it's not even a muscular injury. It's not anything you need to worry about. But, you know, can big men have foot issues, as evidenced by Yao Ming back in the day? Certainly you can. You can have chronic injuries, but there's not really, in my opinion, and the same goes for Chris Paul, such a thing as being chronic injury prone, in my opinion. Sometimes you just have random injuries and bad luck, and in the case of Clint Capela getting an elbow to the face, folks, that can happen to anybody. I mean, that's an injury Hakeem Olajuwon in his prime suffered here in Houston. It happens, and thankfully he'll just miss a couple of games. It feels worse than it is because you have the Clint Capela injury compounded onto the ongoing situations with Chris Paul and Luke Bamute, but it is what it is. I think at this point the Rockets just want to get through this week, and then hopefully starting with the New Year's Eve home game against the Lakers, get back to being themselves. And if there's a silver lining to the Capela orbital fracture, it's that it actually gives him a couple more days off. Actually, it gives him, I think, 4 or 5 days off to rest that bruised heel as well. That's something that Mike D'Antoni pointed out in his interview with Jonathan Fagan in the Chronicle yesterday, and that's a really good point because you could tell they brought Capela back for the first time from the heel Monday the 18th against the Jazz. Clearly did not respond as they had hoped. He missed the next two games, came back a week later, Christmas night in Oklahoma City, and played relatively well, 19-10 in 30 minutes, but even independent of whatever was going on with the orbital fracture, you could see from time to time Clint, I don't want to say struggling, but maybe a step slow, and I'm sure that injury is as long-lasting as it's been. It's not like it's 100% gone away. So by virtue of this orbital fracture, yes, it sucks that the Rockets have lost 3 straight games. And conceivably, it could play a role in you losing 1 or 2 more, but at the same time, it could almost be a blessing in disguise, and that when he comes back, not only does he have the mask and, you know, the orbital fracture is hopefully subsiding, but you also have a few extra days to rest that heel. And so rather than trying just to have him gut it out to get as many wins as you can, perhaps when Clint Capela comes back, that foot is fully healthy as well. And so you get a fully spring-loaded version of Clint Capela that gives you the kind of athleticism on both offense and defense that we've seen from him when he's at his peak. For now, though, it's certainly lost because, as I've said, that's the thinnest position that the Rockets have, in my opinion, because they really don't have another option that can replicate what Clint gives you in terms of versatility on both ends of the floor. Nene, it's not every game, but certainly Nene sometimes gives you a quality impact offensively. Defensively, at 35 years old, it is what it is. He's slow rotating. He's certainly not a shot blocker. Tarik Black, his defense is a little better than Nene, but it's certainly not elite. And then offensively, the chemistry has not been there all year long with the pick and rolls. You can play small ball with Ryan Anderson at the five, but Ryan has not exactly been hot of late. And even when he is making shots, there are certain defensive limitations with that lineup. The Tuck Wagon lineup to P.J. Tucker at the center, that would be probably your most optimal in terms of getting some defense without Clint Capela. But unfortunately, it's tough to play the Tuck Wagon lineups these days because when you have Luke Bamute out and also Chris Paul, you've got a ton of minutes elsewhere in the rotation to fill, and so you don't really have that luxury of being able to slide Tucker into those 5 minutes. So right now, losing Clint Capela, it's a big loss because what he gives you is just impossible to replicate with the other guys on their roster. The upside, though, the newest thing that's just broken within the past hour, the Rockets have agreed to a non-guaranteed deal with Gerald Green, longtime NBA veteran. You know him mostly, I believe, from his Suns days when he averaged a couple of years ago more than 15 points a game. But he's a Houston native. Actually played one game with the Rockets a decade ago. I believe he turned pro out of high school or close to that. But yeah, he debuted in the 2005 season with Boston, played one game with the Rockets in the 2007-08 season. But yeah, his 2 years in Phoenix were the best, averaged 15.8 and 11.9 points per game. Saw him most recently with the Heat 2 years ago and the Celtics this past season. It's his first look this year. But in terms of what he brings you, he's a 6'7" swingman, extremely athletic, and for his career is a 36.1% three-point shooter. He actually, in his peak year, when he scored almost 16 points a game in Phoenix, that was the 2013-2014 season that I was referencing, he shot 40% from behind the arc. So what does this mean? Why am I mentioning Gerald Green right after the discussion we had about Clint Capela and the trickle-down effects from there? It's because, well, if you can fill some of those wing minutes, then all of a sudden you can free up some more options up front, such as moving P.J. Tucker to the center spot, potentially filling some of that roles at the five as well. Now, would the Rockets throw in Gerald Green cold without a practice? I don't know. But at the same time, it would not shock me because, folks, it's a non-guaranteed contract, and they're doing it for depth. And so if you essentially a non-guaranteed contract, that means you get to look at him for basically 10 days before deciding if you want to commit to the roster spot. So my guess is they're looking at this similar to Isaiah Cannon earlier in the year when they were seeking out a third guard, which is that the Rockets will try him out on a short-term basis. If it works, great. I mean, if he plays well and gives them something, then would they be open to keeping him? Yes, absolutely. But I think what they're likely seeing this as is over the next 10 days, they need some sort of stopgap measure while the rest of these guys heal up to get them through this rough patch of the schedule. And Gerald Green, now at 31 years old and a veteran of 10 years in the league, many teams, it's not like there's going to be a huge learning curve with him. He should be able to step in fairly quickly. Now, would they throw him out there game one without a practice? I don't know about that, but at the same time, I think it'd be very feasible by game two, because with the Rockets, as I said, this is all about a short-term move. I don't think you sign Gerald Green if you're not intending to play him any, because otherwise, why don't you spend any money at all? This is a guy who you're probably going to release unless he plays extremely well in 10 days, so there's no point in signing him if you really don't think that you're going to use him. So I do think, be it today, and according to Jonathan Thing in the Chronicle, he's in Boston, so theoretically he could be in uniform tonight. But essentially, the Rockets have six games to evaluate him before the date comes that they would have to waive him in order to avoid the contract becoming guaranteed. So I think there's going to be an incentive to get him out there as soon as possible, certainly without Chris Paul, Luke Bamute, and Clint Capella. He can fill some needed rotation minutes. And it's one of those things, for all we hear about the Rockets having a system and Mike D'Antoni's intricate offense and all this kind of stuff, sometimes you just need bodies, and this is the Rockets adjusting to that. They have an open roster spot, and kudos to them. I'm sure they drew a hard line in the sand, just like they did with Isaiah Cannon, of it being non-guaranteed, because in theory, they would love to keep that spot open, that 15th spot, so they can go after buyout candidates in February, which the Rockets, as one of the best teams in the league, would seem to be very well positioned with Chris Paul and James Harden doing the recruiting to lure a quality guy. But in the interim, if you can get a quality player on a non-guaranteed contract, great. And for Gerald Green, you know, sure, he would like to earn a spot with the Rockets long-term, but regardless, it's, you know, it benefits both, because then if Green comes in and plays well, then he can show off to the rest of the league, and even if there's not a spot for him with the Rockets, then all of a sudden that 10-day look can potentially get him interest from around the league as well. So it's sort of a marriage of convenience, but I like it for the Rockets because, as I've said before, what the Rockets need isn't so much any specific position, it's bodies. Because even without Chris Paul, even in the absence of, you know, your starting point guard, well, folks, as far as facilitating, James Harden is your lead dog for 36, 38 minutes, however long he's out there in a given game. And then the other 10 minutes that James Harden isn't out there, Eric Gordon's going to be your primary facilitator. So even now, you don't need a point guard just to have a guard. What you need are bodies. You need guys who can cover the wing defensively. You need guys who can space the floor offensively. You like a little bit of athleticism, and Gerald Green can provide all of those things. That's why it makes sense. It's not like the Rockets need exposition. It's that they need bodies. They need to lengthen that rotation, which the other night was just eight players, and that was with playing Bronte Weber, who just entered the rotation two nights ago, and that was with Clint Capella, who now is not available for at least the next two games due to the issue with the orbital fracture now on top of what we knew with his heel. So this is a pretty smart move in the short term for the Rockets, I think. Is Gerald Green going to be a long-term fixture of this team? My guess is safe money says he won't be. But as far as getting through this rough patch of the schedule and maybe even stealing a win against a tough team like Boston or Washington, you need to give yourself as many options as you can. And this at least gives the Rockets the kind of bodies that I think they need. Maybe even because of Gerald Green's length, you can imagine not playing Trevor Ariza 42-plus minutes a game. What a concept that would be. But I like it because, folks, you're not exactly going to have a long list of players that are willing to sign for you for a non-guaranteed deal, essentially a 10-day look. But for Gerald Green and the Rockets, it makes sense for both sides. And as far as what that means for the rest of the rotation, I don't think it's as much as, well, you're going to plug in Gerald Green to fill X person's minutes. No, it's that you'll just have another body to throw out there, and then because of that, it gives you more flexibility up and down the roster, including potentially moving guys like P.J. Tucker or Ryan Anderson to the five more if you don't like what you're getting from Nene or Tarik Black. Because right now, as I said, the difficulty in doing all of that is that, well, if you're one of those guys to the five, who's going to play the forward spots? Because it's not just that you have Luke Mute, Chris Paul, Clint Capela, three of your usual nine-man rotation out. You don't even have Troy Williams, who I think was designed going into this year as kind of your insurance policy in case one of those guys gets hurt. They liked what they saw from Troy at the end of last year. They signed him to a deal in the offseason, and generally he's got a great attitude. He's young, he's athletic, he knows defense, playing with both the Grizzlies and the Rockets this past year. And, well, now he's got an MCL sprain in his right knee, and he's out as well. So there's just not many options the Rockets can turn to. Kudos to them for at least acknowledging that the short term does matter, because you certainly don't want to throw away any games when you're competing with the Warriors for the one seed, and as I record this podcast, still tied with them with the tiebreaker for the West top record, as long as you go by losses. And folks, I always analyze the race by losses. I don't care about the other stuff, because when you win as much as the Warriors and Rockets do, ultimately what you want to follow is the loss column, because those are what come so rarely. The wins, more often than not, are going to be there, so that's why I track the losses when I'm comparing teams, as opposed to the overall margin, because that's going to fluctuate a lot based on exactly how many teams, a certain team has played by a certain point in the year. So that's where Gerald Green fits in the short term. Could be as soon as tonight in Boston. He's there. It just depends on whether the league ratifies it in time. But it wouldn't shock me. I mean, the league is able to work on short timetables. If you remember when the Rockets signed Isaiah Cannon, it got done literally 45 minutes before they were playing in Philadelphia that night. And then Isaiah Cannon actually ended up playing in that game. So there's precedent for it on the NBA level and for Mike D'Antoni in terms of putting a new guy into the rotation, especially if they're a veteran and they're proven. Folks, I know that there's a system here in Houston, but it's not exactly rocket science, and I think that's what it's going to get Gerald Green a look sooner rather than later. Also, one final note on Gerald Green, courtesy of Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. He points out that while the NBA's deadline of January 7th is to guarantee Green's contract for the season or waive him, if they waive him, and assuming he's out claimed, the Rockets could still sign him back on additional 10-day contracts, depending on exactly what's going on with the status of the remainder of the injuries. Right now, that's Chris Paul, Luke Bamute, and Clint Capela. So it's not only a 10-day deal or guarantee. There are some options that could keep Green in Houston on a short-term basis. Not guaranteed, because obviously I believe he'd have to clear the waivers. But it's not just as simple as saying, well, by January 7th, either you sign him for the year to that final roster spot or he's gone. There's a little bit more flexibility the Rockets have to it as well. That's an important part of the equation. Now, the last name on the agenda that I haven't discussed in depth yet is Chris Paul. And, of course, he's the most important big picture. He's a top 10 player in the league. And a lot of folks want to know what's going on with him. And it sounds like now that he's certainly not playing tonight. He's been ruled out in Boston. And he may not play until Sunday at home against the Lakers. And that's a little bit of an about-face from earlier in the week when Mike D'Antoni said that they were targeting his return for one of these two games on the back-to-back. And conceivably, it still could happen, but it sounds like maybe Sunday against the Lakers, as we said earlier, kind of giving them a couple of tune-up games before the Warriors next Thursday, is becoming the target for Chris Paul. A couple of reasons for that. They did report Sunday that there was some soreness from Chris Paul. So with this being a muscular injury, you always want to be careful. He did go through another workout Monday before the game in Oklahoma City. So it's certainly nothing catastrophic that they're overly worried about if they're putting him through a workout. But any soreness at all is a little bit of a red flag. So when we heard that Sunday he had some, maybe that buys him a couple extra days. The other factor that I think is relevant here is the Clint Capela injury. And because I do think there's sort of a link in the sense that at Boston, at Washington, on the road against two pretty good teams. Now, I know the Wizards' record is not exactly as great as it probably should be, 19-16. The team's talent is more than that, and unfortunately, the Rockets are at a point now they get everybody's best shot, it feels like. But the Wizards at 19-16, the Celtics at 28-10, these are two games where if you don't have Clint Capela, and as we said earlier, given the trickle-down effects that happen to the defense, the offense, just how difficult to replace his particular skill set is, it's challenging. It's very, very challenging for the Rockets in these two games. Now, you're not without hope. James Harden can catch fire in any game, and if he does, then the Rockets are capable of beating anyone, anywhere. James is just that transcendent of a player. However, without Clint Capela, I think you're in a spot where you're probably going to be underdogs in both of those games. Not without hope, but certainly underdogs. And I think that might affect the Chris Paul calculus just a little bit from the standpoint of if you may not win the game anyway, then why is it worth pushing the envelope? If there's a decent shot that those are going to be losses no matter what, then why not take a couple extra days to be sure that a Dr. Strange is as close to 100% as it possibly can be before putting him back out there on New Year's Eve against the Lakers and then, of course, getting him ready for the all-important Warriors game next Thursday. I don't know that. I highly doubt the Rockets will say that on the record. That's just between me and you guys, just my idle thoughts, because I do think there's potentially a link there between what's going on with Clint Capella and the urgency to return Chris Paul. Because if you're not in a great spot to win these games anyway, then maybe you should just be a little more cautious. And as opposed to trying to grind out everything now, maybe turn the focus to get back that when these guys return, be as close to 100% as humanly possible so that hopefully you can flip the switch again and be that juggernaut that had won 14 consecutive games at one point, including 20 of 21. Now, to break down these themes more, I'm going to be joined momentarily by Ben Standig. He is the host of Locked On Wizards, Wizards Insider for NBC Washington. Actually, I just got done taping an interview with him a while ago. It's basically a crossover episode that he's going to use on his Wizards affiliates. But it was a very good chat, and I think you guys will enjoy hearing this as well, so that's why I'm putting it on this the back half of this program. But as I said, he's the Wizards Insider for NBC Washington, hosts the Locked On Wizards podcast, and we talked about, obviously, the Rockets-Wizards matchup, because that's coming down the pike tomorrow. Figured that would be a better conversation point today than the Celtics game, because the Celtics game is only a couple hours away as we record this anyway. But we talked some about the Rockets-Wizards specific to that matchup, but also bigger picture, where these two franchises are at. And there's a lot of talk from Ben, one of the better national NBA correspondents, talking about his perception of the Rockets from a distance and where this franchise is as we enter the 2018 year. And as, at least for a few more hours, the Rockets remain tied with the Warriors in the loss column for the NBA's best record. So give me just a couple of seconds to get that audio together, and I will play back my conversation with Ben Standig, Wizards Insider for NBC Washington, right here on Locked On Rockets.
All right, as promised, joining us from the Locked On Rockets podcast, with Houston coming into D.C. on Friday, we've got to get a look ahead and see what's up with James Harden and those crazy guys is Mr. Ben Dubose at on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Ben, always a pleasure talking with another Ben. How are things how are things going for you post Christmas? I mean, you've got a fun situation to cover, whereas my team is maddening. Your team is just continually seems to be on the up and up and up for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part, until the past week, they have lost three in a row, and we'll see what happens tonight when they're in Boston. It's a back-to-back for the Rockets. But I'm thrilled to get back to basketball because they kind of had a weird stretch in which they had a lot of games in a short period of time. They had a seven-game homestand that just wrapped up at the end of last week, which is the longest of the year. It felt like you saw them pretty much every day. And then since then, it's been almost nothing because between Friday and today, Thursday, as we're talking, they played one game. So I think everybody, you know, it's nice to have some time off around the holidays, although they did play Christmas night in Oklahoma City. Nice to have time off, but at the same time, you know, come on, Ben, we love basketball. So I'm thrilled to get back to actually talking hoops and seeing them on the floor again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes the schedule, the Wizards have had, you know, played like every other day for some stretches. And sometimes like, okay, I kind of need a little break. And then when they're off for more than one day, I'm like, oh, wait, hold on. I got nothing to do here. What are we doing? Get back on the court.
Yeah.
yeah, totally understand that. So we'll go back and forth here. I'll ask you questions. You'll ask me questions or wherever we take the conversation.
Sure.
Just to start, like, look, I'm sure everybody comes to you and says, all right, James Harden, Chris Paul, how's that going? I don't need to go there, partly because, one, Chris Paul, from what I understand, is not going to play Friday against the Wizards. Am I right about that?
Well, he hasn't been ruled out, but personally, I'm skeptical. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And it sounds like Clint Capella is at least dicey as well. We hate it when the players think ahead, right? The Wizards, they've been accused of maybe looking past some opponents to get to the next game. I'm not saying that's what happened when they lose to Atlanta, as they did an 8-win Atlanta team with Houston on deck. But, you know, there's some of that perhaps in the air for some of these games. But it's hard to not look ahead to the playoffs and imagine with all these teams that we cover, how do they match up against a certain team? For everything the Wizards do, I don't really care what it looks like against Atlanta. I care what it looks like against Boston or Cleveland. And I'm sure for you, on some level, it's got to be the same thing with Golden State. And so with that in mind, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this gets more attention than I recognize. I don't know. But I think what intrigues me so much about Houston against Golden State, it isn't as much about Harden and Paul, because obviously they have to play at a high level to have any chance. It's the two-way wings that you guys have with Trevor Ariza, a guy that we know very well here in the D.C. area from his time with the Wizards. Luke Mbah-Umute, who is such a presence on the defensive end. And P.J. Tucker, another guy who can hit some threes and gets after defensively. I'm just so intrigued by what those three guys can potentially do, combined with Capella in the middle, combined with Chris Paul at the point, defensively against Golden State. You're not shutting the Warriors down. But I'm just fascinated by that trio in particular and how they were assembled, I assume, in mind of trying to take down Golden State. Am I right in thinking that there's a lot there, or am I just missing out on the conversation about those guys?
No, not at all. And we saw that a lot opening night in Oakland. That's the only time these two teams have played this year. But the Rockets actually did not. I think Capella only played about 18 minutes that night. The story opening night was their ability to go small. They had a few minutes here and there with Ryan Anderson at the center spot, but basically down the stretch of that game, you had Tuck Wagon lineups, that's what they call it, with P.J. Tucker at the center spot, Luke Mbah-Umute at the four, because in that sense, the Rockets are able to effectively switch on everything, and that's what they couldn't do a year ago against the Warriors, and also to a lesser extent the Spurs, because when you're in the Western Conference, you also measure yourself against the Spurs. It just comes to the territory as well. But yes, they're much more flexible defensively this year. That's why there's a lot more optimism. Unfortunately, in the short term, a lot of this has kind of come to a screeching halt because the Rockets have been without Luke Mbah-Umute for a couple of weeks. And then over the past week, they've had injuries to Chris Paul and Clint Capella. To kind of break down what's happened in this three-game slide, Ben, through the first, I believe, almost 30 games of the year, the Rockets were sixth in the league in defense rating. Then 2 weeks ago, it was the game against Charlotte. That's when Luke Mbah-Umute went out with a shoulder injury. They think he's only going to miss one more week. I think the hope is by next Thursday, that's the next time the Rockets play the Warriors, that all three of those guys will be back. Because certainly, A, you want to see how you fare against the Warriors, but B, you also want to beat them for purposes of seeding, potentially getting a tiebreaker, because the Rockets are only one win away from having the season series against the Warriors. So there's a lot of emphasis on kind of that next Thursday, a week from today, as you know, when the Rockets need to get back to being the Rockets. But yeah, get back to my point on Mbah-Umute. They were sixth in the league through almost the first 30 games, and then in the 2 weeks since, the Rockets have been in the upper 20s, which is just a staggering decline. And it's like I said, it started with Mbah-Umute, then you throw in Chris Paul and Clint Capella. And as far as what that means for the Wizards tomorrow night, Capella has been ruled out. Chris Paul has not. Capella, he's been in and out with a heel injury for the past couple of weeks. Now, that's actually not what he's ruled out with. What he's ruled out with is an orbital fracture. He took an elbow, I believe, from Steven Adams, inadvertent, of course. But an elbow from Steven Adams is still going to hurt no matter what. So he took that in the third quarter of the Christmas game, and he's been ruled out for the road trip. It's a situation where after the swelling dies down in a few days, they're pretty confident that he'll be able to play with a mask. And big picture, I think it actually could be a blessing in disguise, because while he, lets the swelling and the orbital fracture go down, he also simultaneously gets to rest that heel, which is what's been giving him issues the past couple of weeks. But in the short term, it's a big hit, because I also think earlier in the week, Mike D'Antoni said that the goal was for Chris Paul, to play in one of these two games on the back-to-back at Washington, at D.C., and now they're kind of walking back from that. So my response to it would be, if Clint Capella is not out there, then there may not be as much of an incentive to push the envelope with Chris Paul. Because let's be real, at Washington, at Boston, on a back-to-back without Clint Capella, the Rockets are going to be underdogs in both of these games no matter what. So I think that may change the calculus a little bit with Chris as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, that's an interesting point about connecting Paul with Capella, and you're right, at the end of the day, there's definitely, you got to win all you can, and obviously Houston's in position to, right now, competing with Golden State for the one seed, which is obviously very important, but at the same point, it's still early on, you can't push it for things like that, so if he's not all the way in, and Yeah, you don't want to. You think it's a bad spot? Don't risk it. You know, the one good thing about a Clint Capela injury, though, I assume, is that it could mean a little more Nene in our life on Friday night. I don't know if that's exact correlation, but I would assume it has to be a little bit, and that obviously is fun for those of us who covered him here. You know, he's had a much different role with the Rockets than he did with the Wizards. By the way, very, very frustrated. He played 67 games last year, which is most as many as he played in any single season with the Wizards. For all the times I saw Nene not able to get on the court, I was like, really? Now you're in shape? Now you're playing? Come on, Nene. What are you doing?
I think it will be a good thing. It'll be fun to see him out there. But, you know, as far as who it's good for, that remains to be seen. One of the stories for the Rockets this year, Nene has not been the guy this year, particularly defensively, that he was a year ago. And that's why when the Rockets have been without Clint Capela, when you look at their season, they've had a lot of injuries. And quite frankly, so does every team around the association. The Rockets, you know, are far from alone in that regard. But they have a winning record without Chris Paul. They have a winning record without Eric Gordon. I think they still have a winning record without Bob Mute, even though they've lost the past three. But the one guy they do not have a winning record without is Clint Capela, and it's because his skill set is so difficult to replace. Obviously, everyone thinks of his athleticism in the lob game, but defensively, he's gotten a lot stronger. Even from last year, he's developed a lot of strength. He's rangy. He's athletic. He provides them a level of rim protection that a 35-year-old Nene just simply cannot provide. And then they signed Tarik Black in the offseason, but Black's been a little bit of a disappointment to this point. Black is a little better defensively than Nene, but offensively, for whatever reason, the chemistry has just not been there on the pick and rolls, which are the bread and butter of Mike D'Antoni's offense. So with Nene, first off, he's a great guy. I love interviewing him. Great dude. But the Rockets, it's kind of, at this point in the year, you're relying on blind faith to some degree. Because last year, I won't say it was all pretty in the regular season, but in the playoffs, he was tremendous. He was, other than James Harden, the MVP of that first-round series against the Thunder. I think he had one game in which he had 28 and 13, and I believe he was 10 of 10 from the field. He was that good. And so you're at a point in Nene's career where, of course, he's not playing on the back-to-backs. But in addition to that, he's the energy is just not there in October, November, December, even when he does play. And I think there's a little bit of blind faith. You say, hey, this guy turned it up when it mattered last year. He played extremely well in the playoffs. There's a good shot that's going to happen again. But ultimately, there is going to be a season, we all know it, where whether it's 35, 36, 37, or he just doesn't have that extra gear that he can kick into. And so that's, you know, I won't say it's a huge worry of mine because he certainly was able to elevate his play last year when it mattered. But to this point, it's been underwhelming because, well, there's kind of a point of diminishing returns anyway. You don't want to play him over about 20 minutes a game or else there's fatigue and injury issues that could play. But even limiting him to the 15 to 20 minutes, you just see, not that he was a shot blocker to begin with, but he seemed even a step slower compared to last year. And you hope over time he's able to figure that out. But in the short term, Nene has not really been a source of strength for the Rockets in these past couple of weeks that Clint Capela has been in and out of the lineup.
Yeah, no, just to go back to one thing you said, Nene is definitely a fun guy to deal with. He you could see the slippage a little bit when he was here. So, look, obviously, you know, puts a lot, you know, I joke about the injury somewhat, but obviously, he's been banked up a lot. And I had a foot issue the last 6 months or so where I every time I just started walking around, it just was killing me. And I just kept thinking about, boy, I feel like Nene now. Like every day I'm like, oh,
yeah,
this is terrible. I don't know what I can do. I'm excited to see him. Hopefully, bummer that there's no shoot around because the Rockets will be getting in late. So hopefully I'll get a chance to talk to him pregame on Friday. I guess all things in general, though, I mean, is this season just exceeding all expectations? Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's exceeding all expectations. I mean, obviously Houston was a very good team already. James Harden and, you know, obviously a ridiculous player, MVP candidate. I mean, has this thing been as you kind of hoped, or imagined, or is this like even crazier, especially that run where with Chris Paul? Has Chris Paul lost the game yet? Like when he's playing?
He lost one, but it was the game that he left early due to injury. So if we say games that Chris Paul actually finished, you know, he is still not.
That's crazy. I'll just say this from the outside. Obviously, Chris Paul, great player. James Harden, great player. I didn't necessarily love it the way some people did, only in the sense that because, you know, I'm not saying anything that's, breaking news here, because both of these guys are such ball-dominant players, on some level, you're taking away what each of them can do when playing together, at least a little bit, so you can't maximize both players, whereas I think one of the keys to Golden State is all four of those main guys can play and not screw each other over. They can play at a full level because of how their games are and still work. That said, because Harden and Paul can both shoot threes, it does seem like it would work, whereas like some people want to put like a non-shooter with John Wall, and I'm like, no, don't do that. You can't, you know, John Wall can't play off the ball or whatever, you know. You have to know your team. So, but I guess just to go back, has this been even what you imagined? Is it way better, or are they not even really scratched the surface yet?
I would say it's been better. It's tough to draw too many long-term conclusions because Chris Paul's only played in about half the games to this point. But, I mean, big picture, even with a three-game losing streak, look, they're tied with Golden State for the fewest losses in the NBA, and at the moment they have the tiebreaker. They're ahead of the Spurs in the race for, you know, to make sure you secure a top two seed. Big picture, it's hard not to, you know, if you told Rockets fans that we'd be having this conversation right before the new year, and they'd be 25-7 and tied with the Warriors for the best record in the league, I think anyone in the world would have taken that and run with it. It's a phenomenal start, even with the past week and the injuries being what they are. So, big picture, yes, we're pleased where they are. As far as Harden and Paul, I would say, you know, we need a larger sample, but I'm fairly encouraged. Now, certainly you want to see the team pick up their defensive intensity. That's been kind of the theme the last couple of weeks. And as far as the Wizards, I'll get your take in a moment because this is a matchup where without Chris Paul, it worries me how you stop John Wall from attacking the bucket because James Harden, Eric Gordon, you don't really have an ideal option in the backcourt to pick up John Wall in terms of stopping penetration. And without Clint Capella, you don't have much in the way of rim protection inside, given the issues that we just spoke about with Nene. So on paper, it profiles as a pretty friendly matchup for John Wall, and I'd be curious your take on that. But as far as, you know, the Rockets, the Harden-Paul integration, the good news, small sample, but we have seen signs lately that those two can play together. Now, to start with, you could really see the synergies when one was off the floor. We talked, Mike D'Antoni has said since the moment the trade was announced in June that a big part of it for them was that all 48 minutes, they would have a Hall of Fame point guard out there. And the point being, at some point, the other team's going to go in a lull that you won't go into because you have at least one of those two guys out there guiding the ship. And essentially, you know, people fixate on how they play together. Well, assuming each rests about, you know, 12 or so minutes per game, that means there's half the game when James is going to be out there with that Chris, and Chris is going to be out there with that James. And early on, that's where the Rockets found the most success, and that was easiest because, of course, it's putting them back in the roles that they've been having as far as dominating the ball for a lot of their careers. However, the last week or so, as the defense has declined, it's put the Rockets in tougher spots to where they do have to execute late in close games. And, of course, that's going to matter because you get to the playoffs, even if the Rockets are able to, you know, put the band back together, everybody gets back healthy, and let's say they turn back into that juggernaut that won 14 in a row in 20-21. Even if that happens, the Rockets are not going to blow out the Warriors and the Spurs in playoff series. At best case, you're going to have a lot of close games, have to execute the final 6 minutes. And when the defense tailed off, a lot of the games on that recent homestand were maybe closer than they should have been, but the Rockets actually performed very well offensively late in close games. The big part of it was, James picking up Chris, and more importantly, Chris picking up James. Because before Chris went out with an injury, James Harden had a week where he was sick with a cold. He had a couple of nagging bruises to various parts of his legs. And you could just see that if it wasn't James's possession, he was comfortable playing off the ball and letting Chris Paul initiate. So that's been the optimistic thing for the Rockets, is that it's not just a matter of, well, you have these two guys playing all 48 minutes and they're dominating when the other isn't out there. No, on this recent homestand, we saw them closing out games successfully with Harden and Paul essentially trading possessions late in the game. And that, to me, is a pretty good sign in terms of, A, that it worked, and, B, their selflessness that, you know, no one seemed bothered. You know, it doesn't matter who gets the headlines as long as the Rockets won the game. So it's early. It's a small sample. And hopefully Chris Paul, knock on wood, is healthy enough to stay out there long enough for us to get a better gauge on it. But so far, pretty encouraged.
Well, good. Well, hey, you know, it's more fun covering an exciting team than a maddening team. And I know you you had some thoughts for me. So steer me where you want me to go, because I could talk about the Wizards, or I do talk about them way too much already. What's from your perspective on the outside, what's sort of intriguing to you, whether about this game or about them overall?
Well, like I said a moment ago, it feels like a bad matchup for the Rockets just because without Chris Paul, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this seems like a very John Wall-friendly matchup with no real rim protector in the middle for the Rockets and not really having a guy who could stop penetration regularly. I'm assuming they'll use Eric Gordon to check the ball as much as possible. You'll also see occasionally Trevor Ariza, but I think you're at a point in the year with the Bamute injury. Trevor Ariza's been averaging like 42 minutes a game the last couple of weeks. So if he's having to log those type of minutes with the depth issues, I don't think you want to have him play 42 minutes plus guard John Wall for extended stretches. Now, certainly he will a little bit, but I would think in general, Eric Gordon checks them at least half the time, and that would seem to be a pretty rosy scenario for the Wizards, at least at first glance. As far as what else I'm curious about, the Wizards, to me, they worry me from a Rocket standpoint, because they seem like they are able to get up for bigger games. Obviously, the one that stood out before the Rockets played Oklahoma City on Christmas, you look at the Wizards-Celtics game, and the Wizards, from an outsider's perspective, seem like a team that maybe coasting is too strong a word, but the talent is more than the sum of the parts. And what I mean by that is, you know, you have these head-scratching losses from time to time, but when they're on the bigger stages, they seem to have played relatively well. And when the Rockets are coming to town, their only visit, this is a team that right now is tied for the best record in the NBA, has James Harden, the MVP frontrunner. It seems like a game that the Wizards would get up for. And the Wizards, to me, feel like a team that when they are fully motivated for a game can be pretty dangerous. Is that a fair assessment? And if it's not, give me some color from the DC side of things.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of what you just said is spot on. I last night, so we're doing this on a Thursday afternoon. Wednesday night, I was covering the Georgetown home basketball game, and I had the Wizards on my laptop. And the Georgetown game decided they wanted to go to double overtime, so I didn't catch up to the Wizards until later. But I saw enough of the end of the game, which I've seen before, where against a team that they should easily put away, or, you know, not no disrespect to Atlanta, they have 8 wins. The Wizards just looked apathetic at times, not hustle, you know, not hustling for plays. And, you know, all the guys that played have a hand in it. Same with Scott Brooks, but the starters in particular, when the Wizards have come up short, it's typically the starters look disinterested. Whether it's looking past the opponent or you know, as I said to you earlier, it's hard for me to not look ahead to how do the Wizards match up against the Celtics or the Cavs or the Raptors in the playoffs.
Yep.
I think they do that too, and I think that's been part of the problem. That Game 7 loss to Boston let them, on the one hand, it left a bad taste in their mouth, but they also came out of it with a lot of bravado, thinking that they should have won. And I feel like they are just ready to get back there and prove that, and not doing the necessary work in the interim to get there. They have a winning record. It's not like it's been a total disaster by any stretch, but they're not putting the good work in, game in, game out, to build as champions do, as the best teams do, and that's been a huge issue. As far as this game goes, you said this is a good game for John Wall. I think you're right. I mean, you know, when he's been on, he's been very good this year. He hasn't been on quite as much as I suspect his reputation would let most people think. Like, he'll probably make the All-Star team because he's he's that level player. Game in, game out. Like, depending on what night you watch him, you may not necessarily think you're watching an All-Star player, especially defensively. When the Wizards are bad defensively, often it's because Wall's letting his guy get into the lane, or maybe he's looking to take too many shots. But yes, I suspect we'll see the best version of John Wall against Houston. Same with the other guys. I mean, Bradley Beal and Otto Porter have largely had very good years. One key for the Wizards, Markieff Morris had hernia surgery in the offseason. He missed the first 7 games and was very, very slow to get back to his normal form, as it were. We're starting to see that more lately. He's starting to hit his threes with a little more regularity. He's starting to be more comfortable offensively. His rebounding numbers are still not that impressive, and he's picking up a technical foul, seems like, every other game. So that's not ideal. But, you know, from the big picture standpoint, everybody in these parts, they like to blame Ernie. You know, they like to point out essentially that Ernie Grunfeld is not a Daryl Morey. He's not maybe the most creative of front office types. He hasn't been able to gather assets to build towards a bigger move the way Houston has done multiple times. And they like to point to that as potentially an issue for this team, or maybe like the point of a Jan Mahimi, who was certainly overpaid, as the issue. And I would say to those people, there's truth in some of that. That's not why they're struggling against these bad teams. They're struggling against these bad teams because the talent they do have is not playing at their full level. We see it too many times to the good. It isn't just that all of a sudden these other issues are the problem. Yes, it would be better if they had some more options off the bench. So on a night where Wall or others weren't playing at their best, you could kind of go there. But that's not really the issue. They have enough stuff to make this work. The starters were very good last year. They can be very good now. They just have to do it a little more consistently. And, you know, 35 games into the year, whatever this is, they haven't shown the ability to do that.
Yeah, and last question for you from my end. When you think Wizards, of course, you think John Wall, Bradley Beal, you think the perimeter guns that you've got. Curious what your take is on their rim protection at this point in the year, because from a Rockets standpoint, it feels like a game where if they're going to be able to steal this, that Nene probably has to take on a bigger role. We talked about him earlier because of his Wizards history. Maybe that makes him more engaged because it's his former team. We can call it hashtag Nene revenge game. Because it just seems like the Rockets had a lot of those, by the way, over the past week. When the losing streak was snapped, it was snapped because Corey Brewer, his first game back in Houston, guys averaging 2.5 points a game this year, had 21 points on 7 of 9 shooting. Then, 2 nights later, when they played the Clippers, Lou Williams shot out of his mind, 7 of 11 from 3. So Rockets fans are very acutely aware of so-called revenge games. So maybe there's a psychological thing for Nene there, I think only a second time back to D.C. But beyond just any silly things like that, I think big picture, the reason the Rockets need a big game from Nene is because without Chris Paul, with all the other injuries you're dealing with, it feels difficult, other than James Harden scoring 50 or 60, which I guess is always possible, to see the Rockets offense humming the way it needs to overcome some of their defensive issues due to the injuries. And, you know, the best route I can see the Rockets to, you know, potentially scoring the points they need to win this game is if they have one of those throwback Nene games where all of a sudden he goes, you know, 8 of 10 on the low block and ends up scoring 20 or 22 points. What do the Wizards offer inside? And is this a matchup where Nene, and you know what Nene offers, kind of a crafty, old-school big, is this a matchup where he can find some success?
Well, in a general sense with the Wizards, the biggest, like, when people talk about what do the Wizards need to do if they are going to make a big move, or even if it's a subtle move, what do they need? And I do think rim protection is probably pretty high on the list. I mean, Marcin Gortat, he's still, you know, everybody talks about the screen assists, and he's definitely a big help in that regard, and he'll still get you some double-doubles with rebounding and points, but he's really not offering much anymore in the way of protecting the rim. So you have Jan Mahimi, and Scott Brooks at times has gone with Jan Mahimi as the late-game center if he has a traditional one on the court late, but Jan Mahimi is a turnover machine offensively, and he's not the easiest guy to ride down the stretch. And so if they then go to a small ball lineup, which you probably wouldn't, I guess, if Nene is the five, but if you went with a small ball lineup, now you're looking at Markieff Morris at the five with Kelly Oubre and Otto Porter at the forwards. And that's not, you know, that's a very intriguing lineup from the Wizards' perspective, their version of the death lineup or what have you. And They've only been they broke it out late in that Boston game, and it worked to great success. But in terms of defending the rim, it makes them very vulnerable inside. Not really a lot of rebounding types. If they're active, as they were against the Celtics, then they can do a fine job on the board. But you know, no big bodies out there, so it's been sort of a tough line for them between, you know, they don't have an agile player like a Capella who can really get up and down, you know, can kind of move inside, he can move outside the paint to defend, but also give you real good force at the rim. They don't really have that piece. And so, yeah, I think Nene could do it, but if they're using, if Mahimi or Gortat are in there against him, that's probably enough. I think if the guards, though, penetrate, I don't think the Wizards really have much of a threat in there to do much, you know, in that respect.
Gotcha, that makes sense. Well, Ben, that's all I've got on my end. Any last comments, any last issues we have discussed already you want to throw out there?
Well, I'll just leave you with this, or just ask you this. You know, the NBA has obviously changed a lot over the last few years with the style of play. You know, Golden State, you know, certainly sort of pushed it to the forefront with the perimeter shooting. But it does feel like Houston has gone, with Mike D'Antoni, has taken it even to another level. I think, what is it, 42 threes? The Houston's averaging a game, which is way above.
Yeah, it's just silly.
Right. It's way above everybody else. And look, I get it. I'm not an old man screaming at the clouds. I get the efficiency aspect of it all, and I'm not so much arguing with it. But I'm just sort of curious. Like, I'm not exactly sure your background or your age or anything like that, but you know, you guys, meaning the Rockets, won two titles with one of the greatest centers of all time in Hakeem Olajuwon. And you know, he was so fun to watch. And you know, obviously those types of big men just really don't exist for the most part anymore in the NBA. And I'm just sort of curious, as somebody who watches Houston night in and night out, aesthetically, do you actually like the game that they play with it just so many three-pointers that it looks so different than the game maybe we're all used to from a decade or so ago? Or are you love it? It's certainly fun, exciting. Do you like it? Where are you on sort of the night in, night out of this type of basketball?
I enjoy it. I mean, the ball movement is just exquisite. The pace at which they play, it's certainly weird to see large portions of the floor neglected, although not as much this year because Chris Paul is here and he's, you know, one of the better mid-range players of our generation. You know, the Rockets have said they're, you know, of course they're not mid-range friendly, but if you have a guy like Chris Paul or Dirk Nowitzki, you're not going to take them away from what they do well. So you have seen a little bit more in the way of a mid-range game this year, especially late in close games, which has given them an option, you know, more versatility they didn't have a year ago. But personally, I find it fun. Maybe I'm biased because, you know, I was a three-point shooter myself, so I could be biased in terms of my own preferences. But keep in mind, it certainly wasn't to this extent, but that second Rockets title team in the 90s, that was sort of the beginning of small ball.
Yeah.
Because they dealt away Otis Dora for Clyde Drexler during the season. And, you know, you're playing the small ball with Robert Horry at the 4, Mario Elie at the 3, and then your backcourt of Kenny Smith or Shane Cassell and Clyde Drexler. So that was sort of the beginning of having, you know, 4 out. And even though you had Hakeem, it was very you know, non-traditional at the time. And I would say that's when a lot of Rockets fans grew to, you know, see that, hey, this can be a pretty fun way to play. And even if it's, you know, different, at the same time, you know, when you see the ball movement, especially led by two of the best passers on the planet in James Harden and Chris Paul, it's hard not to enjoy it. And then the other side of it, you know, Ben, I try not to get bogged down in the aesthetics too much because for me, it's always about, you know, are they closer to actually catching the Warriors? Are they closer to actually winning a title? And I think the reality is that their system is exaggerated because it has to be. I think, you know, when the Rockets hired Gerald Lauren and the Rockets hired Mike D'Antoni essentially a year and a half ago, people knew how great the Warriors were. That was when they were coming off of 73 wins, and people knew that, you know, there's a decent shot they'd get Durant, which they did. This is just a transcendent team, by far the most talented in the history of the NBA, in my opinion. And, you know, extremes have to be warranted if you're going to, you know, compete with a team like that. And so I think just for the Rockets, just from a big picture philosophical standpoint, what Gerald Morey, the front office, realized, and I agree with him on this, the best shot you have against a team like Golden State is to increase the variance to where in one given game, if you shoot that many threes and if you connect and make, say, 20 of 50 on a given night, it's going to be really, really tough for the math to work, no matter who the opponent is, to overcome that level of three-point shooting. And, you know, I'm not sure that even Daryl Morey envisioned going it to this extreme when he first took the job over a decade ago, but I just sort of think it's a sign of the times that if you're going to compete with the Warriors, and then, of course, stylistically, the Warriors have so many shooters. They play small. You also have to, you know, kind of match up with them from an athletic perspective as well, and that kind of lends itself to the three-point shooting also. But more than that, I just think big picture philosophically, when you shoot such a high volume of threes, it makes your performance, it increases the variance, and that's kind of what you have if you compete with the Warriors, because to beat the Warriors, you can't just have an A game. You need to have an A++ game. They are that good. And by the Rockets shooting that many threes, it gives them a shot, not a guarantee, but it gives them a shot on any given night to get to a level that hardly anybody else can get to. And so I think it's less about, you know, Joe Morey or Mike D'Antoni, he's just master vision. And I think it's more a little bit of that and just a reflection of the current times and what you've got to do if you want to even think about taking 4 out of 7 from the Warriors come May or June.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, and I think you make I like all that, and your point about that Rockets team with Olajuwon, absolutely right. You guys like Kenny Smith, you know, on the perimeter. You know, you had the one guy inside, a bunch of guys on the outside, and it was sort of a early look at where this game would evolve to. You know, well, sometimes I get a little I don't know if annoyed is the right word, but you know, the Daryl Morey love out there. Sometimes it seems a little blind on some spots, but I mean, you have to love the innovation, the willingness to take risk, you know, the ability to continue to gain assets while simultaneously keeping a team in contention and then turning those assets into things. The Wizards really have just struggled in that department for the most part. I mean, they've gone the opposite way the last few years. They've traded away 3 of their last 4 first-round picks, and they've only had 1 of their potential 8 picks over the last 4 years even play a game for them, because they're continually just flipping those picks for veterans, even,
right.
You know, some guys who are still here, but some guys who are not, and, you know, that's sort of the old-school way of dealing with problems. And, you know, I understand where fans complain about it from that perspective, yeah, no, it's interesting. And, you know, like I said, I miss some of the old school game of the bigs being you know, sure, real factors. You know, but like you, I was a kid in the playground who disliked hoisting up threes. You probably played more than, I don't want to discredit your game. Interesting stuff. Well, look, man, I know I've kept you here, so I'll let you go. Definitely appreciate your time. Are you a traveler? Am I going to see you on Friday, or we'll just talk some other time?
We'll talk some other time. I'm not a traveling beat guy. I do all the home games, but I don't travel with them. There's only for Houston. You'll see Jonathan Fagan from the Chronicle on tour through the trip. We'll see if, of course, ESPN doesn't have a full-time beat writer on the Rockets anymore, but Tim McMahon has covered them a lot, so he's almost kind of de facto that. So yeah, you'll see Fagan. You might see McMahon, but no, I don't go on many road trips unless it's a very close road trip, like Dallas, San Antonio, New Orleans, one of those.
Right. No, I'm the same way. I went up to Philly, but I'll maybe hit up another one or two in the East. But yeah, for the most part, the Wizards beat's the same. It's sort of funny that the NBA, everybody talks about the ratings are improving. There's a lot more interest, but yet I notice on the road, at most, it's like the big city paper has sent somebody, and that's kind of it. It's kind of interesting. Whereas like the football, it's you know, I know a lot less games. It's a lot easier, but you know, every outlet in town, from the big newspaper to the local grocery store chain is sending somebody to cover the game. So next step.
Yep, exactly. And it's such a fascinating dynamic. I mean, we could talk about the journalism landscape for hours, but I've noticed the same exact thing, which is that, you know, there's such a demand for content, the ratings are up, all that kind of stuff. But the problem is there are so few gigs these days that pay for a full-time reporter. And by that, I mean, you know, all the associated costs for traveling, that kind of stuff. And it's just an interesting dynamic because there's so much of a demand for content out there. Obviously, that's great for us, given the podcast here, Locked On Rockets and Locked On Wizards. But at the same time, you know, there are so few positions. It's so tough to make the money work. There's some money, certainly, but to make the money work for full-time positions in the digital age. And so, yeah, at least a weird dynamic in which there's all this demand for content. But unfortunately, there's not that many people that are there more than half the time, meaning, you know, you're there for the home games but not for the road games. Of course, you know, we try to do the best we can, of course, watching on TV, and, you know, that gives us a chance to, you know, pause, rewind, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it is interesting. It's one of those things you hope that over time, the industry's going to be able to make the math work, because, you know, having more of a traveling party, that certainly is the other thing about it. I mean, beyond just getting better coverage for a given game, you know, it's the road trips where you actually build more connections with players, coaches, the people around the team, because when you're at home, you know, everybody's there. There's such a long line for every player and coach's attention when they're at home, between the increased media, the fans, everything else going on, their families, whoever it may be. Whereas on the road, you know, if you just go on a road trip, it's pretty much just you and them, and that's when you can form, you know, bonds that could be essential for down the line in terms of having sources for stories, getting exclusive things. So it's one of those things, you know, I wish that I could go on more road games than I do, but I'm far from alone in that regard, and I'm sure you get that dynamic as well. It's just something that, you know, as people in the industry, we hope over time that it can eventually, we can make a little bit of progress.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, the road is where I think a lot of the juice is, and unfortunately, I mean, they recognize if you're there, then, you know, you're not traveling the exact same sphere, but at the same point, they're going through something, and you're going there too. And anybody who's ever been on your own road trip, you're driving from here to there, that's always where good bonding takes place, and it's a little bit of that if you get them there, but yeah, getting yourself there is the problem for many in this day and age without being associated to a major outlet, but it is what it is. Well, maybe it's a podcast we can all talk about some other time, but for now, Ben, really appreciate it, man. Yeah. Locked on Rockets, very good stuff over there. Appreciate your time, and we'll talk soon.
Thought that was a good chat with Ben Standing, Wizards insider for NBC Washington, host of Locked on Wizards, on really a myriad of topics. Of course, we want to talk about Rockets-Wizards because that's a big game tomorrow night, 6 p.m. tip, local time here in Houston, but also his thoughts on the Rockets, the landscape of the league, and, well, even a few journalism topics toward the very end of that. Ben's a very knowledgeable guy. Great follow on Twitter if you aren't already aware of him, at Ben Standing, STANDIG. So with that, I will wrap up our Thursday episode of Locked on Rockets. As always, thanks to you guys for listening to this extended show. We've covered a lot of ground in this, not just the short term in terms of the Wizards to a lesser extent tonight's Celtics game, but also bigger picture, Clint Capela injury, Chris Paul injury, and of course the signing of Gerald Green to hopefully mitigate some of those depth issues by the Rockets in the short term. So, as far as what's on the agenda for the near term, actual basketball. Celtics tonight, Wizards tomorrow, and of course, if you want post-game analysis, stay tuned right here to Locked on Rockets, because that's where we have you covered all season long. So if you're not already following us, either in a real-time basis on Twitter or through our various podcast platforms, best ways to do that, on Twitter, at Ben Dubose, that's me, or at Locked on Rockets, the show. As far as following the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn, so many places. Just search for Locked on Rockets. You can find us. You can also find Locked on Wizards or any show across the Locked on Podcast Network. That includes not just the NBA, but NFL teams as well, where we have the Houston Texans about to finish up their regular season this Sunday against the Colts. Robert Land and Brian Patterson do a great job of covering them, so search for Locked on Texans as well. Also, our new website, LockedOnRockets.com, and our Facebook page, where we are about to start some live Q&As starting next week. So if you haven't followed us on Facebook, you can do that, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, or LockedOnRockets.com is the website where you can find links to not just our podcast, but some stories and typical reporting and writing as well. Basically a hub for all of my Rockets coverage as Rockets correspondent for not just SportsLock 790, but you guys here at Locked on Rockets and across the Locked on Podcast Network as well. As always, appreciate listening. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. If Twitter is not your thing or Facebook, then you can always email the old school way, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, or inquiries about how to become a potential sponsor. Anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Folks, we would love to hear from you. So for now, I will sign off. Again, Rockets Celtics tonight. And if you're listening to it during or after that game, then Rockets Wizards on Friday night. Celtics tip off 7 p.m. tonight on TNT. Wizards 6 p.m. Friday night. That's a local telecast on AT&T Sports Southwest. Thursday's game will also be on AT&T Southwest, so I want to give Craig Eckerman and Matt Bullard their due. You can find them on the call for both of those games, and those two, as far as I'm concerned, that's as good a broadcasting duo as you will find in the NBA. We are lucky here in Houston. So thankfully, even though it's a national game, I know a lot of you guys like me are probably not fond of national broadcasters at the moment, given the deluge of Hubie Brown analysis of late. So thankfully, you can get back to the Rockets folks we know and love, such as Craig and Matt, on the call the next two games. Anyway, until those are over, hope you guys have a great day, and we'll be talking more on Twitter during the games, Celtics Thursday night, Wizards Friday night, and then, of course, after the games, right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on Houston Rockets basketball.